This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field.
Hey, here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia.
AM tomorrow, but want to make sure I can get this draft recap and preview of day two out to everybody, hopefully in time for your cup of coffee in the morning, or in time once you're done listening to Payne and Pendergast, getting a little bit of a review and a preview of day two. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Just finished up watching round one of the draft. Seth was actually over here tonight watching it with me, so we'll be ready to go at 6 a.m. tomorrow, but wanted to share some thoughts with you. As always, we appreciate it when you give us a rating and a review here on the podcast. And of course, hit the subscribe button so that you get the podcast automatically, especially this weekend. I'll be doing one more bonus episode this weekend on Saturday following day three of the draft. So we got tonight's episode's a bonus episode, and then I'm going to do one on Saturday after the draft is over when I'm done doing Texans radio. I'll be on Texans radio coverage for day three of the draft on Saturday with John Harris and Cecil Short. So let's get right to it. The first round of the draft is over. It's in the books. And I want to start with some Texans angles on this. We'll get to the big stories from the draft itself in just a little bit. But as far as the Texans go, no picks for the Texans tonight. There were some heavy rumors that the Texans were trying to, among many teams that were trying to trade back into the first round. Not sure who they would be targeting if they were going back in, but I thought this draft played out perfectly for the Houston Texans, looking at what's available in round two coming up tomorrow. We got to pick 23 in the draft. It was Jacksonville who had traded back from 17 to 23 with Minnesota. And I told myself going into the draft that I would look at what the landscape looked like at pick 23, and that would be sort of my final referendum on the trade with the Vikings, which I like to begin with. I liked it even more once we got to 23. There were, at that point, still so many names that I thought were a fit for the Texans. And now here we sit, and all 32 first-round picks are in the book, and I feel the same way. There was a ton of offensive players taken in this draft, and the Texans, I don't think, are really looking at the offensive side of the ball in this draft. They're certainly not looking at quarterback. Six of those went in the top 12. I don't think they're looking for offensive linemen, certainly not this high in the draft. There were several offensive linemen that went in the first round. There were, all in all, I believe there were 23 offensive players taken and 9 defensive players. My numbers may be a little off on that, but it was definitely greater than a 2-to-1 ratio of offensive to defensive players. The elite wide receivers, and Brock Bowers, the one elite tight end in this draft, continued to push defensive players down. There wasn't a single defensive player taken in this draft until the 15th pick overall. That was the Colts taking Leitu. I'm sure I'm butchering his name. the edge rusher from UCLA. That was the first defensive player to go off the board. So this could not have played out any better as far as a day one goes for the Texans, unless they really wanted to move back into the first round and get somebody who maybe went off the board at that point. We don't know that. We'll probably never know that. But as far as if you were of mind that we might need to pick at 42, this day could not have gone better for the Texans, I think. Because it was just a ton of wide receivers off the board late in the first round. As I mentioned, the front end of the draft was very offensive linemen and wide receiver and quarterback heavy. So there is still a ton on the board left for the Houston Texans. We'll get into some of the names in just a second. But I thought it was a good night for the Texans without making a pick. It sets up really, really nice for tomorrow or today if you're listening to this in the morning. More likely today if you're listening to it as I record this at 11 o'clock on Thursday night. So again, rumors that the Texans and others were trying to get back into the back end of the first round. Of the players who went towards the back end of the first round, the only ones that I saw there that I could think they might have been moving up to try to get might have been Nate Wiggins, the cornerback from Clemson. Maybe Terrion Arnold, the cornerback from Detroit, although that would have been a pretty significant move up to get all the way up to 24. So that's the only thing I can think of as far as guys that went off the board late in the first. Maybe Darius Robinson from Missouri. He went, late in the first round as well. Those could have been guys the Texans were going after. But my hunch is that Nick Caserio, when he moves up, normally moves up into an area where there's a group of players there. And I've got to believe that if it was indeed say that 25 to 32 range he was trying to move into, I've got to believe that at least one or two of the players that he was looking at in that group are probably still on the board headed into Friday. And that's the cool thing about the way the draft is set up now, as opposed to many, many years ago, is that before the draft used to be on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and rounds 1, 2, and 3 were on the same day. I love that there's a night and a full day to reset before round two, especially for a team like the Texans that have 3 picks on day 2, including the 42nd and 59th pick, and a lot of day 3 capital to maneuver around. So I think it's going to be a fun day to be Nick Caserio. I would love to know what the conversations look like, but I'm guessing he feels pretty good about the way things unfolded on day 1. I've got to believe that. So as far as some of the names that are still available, if I'm the Texans and I'm thinking about the 42nd pick and maybe even the 59th pick as well, I'm really looking on the defensive side of the ball. I'm looking at the wide receivers and the big names that are still left on the defensive line. Johnny Newton from Illinois is still out there. I could definitely see that being somebody that Nick would try to move up maybe from 42 to in that 35 range to go get. Braden Fisk from Florida State. Those are the two big names in the interior of the defensive line that are still out there for the Texans that I think fit at that spot in the draft at 42. There's a ton of cornerbacks, and the Texans need a cornerback, but Cooper DeJean is still out there from Iowa, although he might translate to a safety at the next level. Kool-Aid McKinstry is still on the board right now. I could see that being a guy for sure that the Texans would be looking at, especially with the Alabama pedigree. The Rakestraw kid out of Missouri, Lassiter out of South Carolina, and then TJ Tampa as well. There's a lot of really good corners on the board, enough to where I don't think they would, if they like a group of corners, I feel pretty confident that there's going to be one sitting there at 42 when they pick. Because here's the thing, the wide receiver run has started, and there were 7 that went in the first round, including the very last 2 picks of the first round were Pearsall out of Florida and then Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. Adonai Mitchell is still on the board. I don't know if all the stories over the last week about him being diabetic and having mood swings and things like that impacted him, but he is a big-time receiver who's still there. Ladd McConkey is still out there as well. The Franklin kid from Oregon is still out there. So there's still some really good receivers. I think some of the teams between 33 and 42 are going to be looking receiver, maybe more so than the Texans are. So that's those are three more spots that are going to push some of these defensive players down to the Texans. Edrin Cooper from Texas A&M is still on the board. I think he's a wild card. I don't know if linebacker is certainly not a bigger need for the Texans than defensive tackle or cornerback, but he's a really good player. And if you're in the mind of going best player available or maybe best defensive player available, Edrin Cooper might fit that bill. And then you got some of the safeties, Newbin and Bullard, Bullard out of Georgia, Newbin out of Minnesota. So there are, I mean, I just rattled off one, two, I'm looking at my notes, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11. I mean, I just rattled off a dozen names. The Texans have the 10th pick of the second round. There is going to be a good player that fills a need for the Houston Texans sitting there at 42. Do I think that Nick's going to pick at 42? I don't, only because I'm playing the percentages. Nick Caserio has made 7 day 2 picks in his time as the GM in the second and third round. He's traded up to go get 5 of those 7. So the percentages say that he's going to move up. And, you know, some have been very drastic moves up. You know, he moved up 24 spots to get John Mechie. Some have been tiny moves up. He moved up 4 spots to get Tank Dell. From 42, there's not much room to move. The highest you can go is 33. And he's got a ton of day 3 capital, 2/4, 2/6, 2/7 as of right now. So I expect Nick to move, but maybe just a small move to ensure that he gets the guy that he wants. But if you're a Texan fan, you got to be very encouraged by the way this draft unfolded for you and for the team. So there is that. As far as other things in the draft that we'll get to, this will not be a long episode, I promise you. 3:45 comes early for me. But the AFC South, the three teams in the AFC South, the Titans went tackle, as most people thought they would, although I think most people thought the Titans were going to wind up with John Alt from Notre Dame and or Joe Alt. I can't remember. John's the dad or Joe's the son. I should know this. I went to Notre Dame. But the Alt kid from Notre Dame, he ended up going to the Chargers at 5. So they ended up taking Latham from Alabama at 7. That's fine. Tennessee is going to be an awful football team this year. I'm not super worried about about them taking a potential left tackle. He's a good player. Latu to Indianapolis is interesting. I trust Seth Payne's evaluation on defensive linemen, and he's pointed out many times about Latu, who I think he likes, but is concerned about two things. One, the neck injuries that he's had that forced him to retire at one point. He retired from college football and then came back and went to UCLA and made himself into a first round pick. Credit the kid for that. But against some of the bigger, stronger competition, he got swallowed up. I forget the name of the tackle that got drafted right before him from Oregon State, another Polynesian name. But he destroyed Latu in their matchup this year in the Pac-12. So Latu, good player. He's not somebody who really moves the needle and scares me for Indianapolis. Jacksonville getting Brian Thomas from LSU is obviously, it's a nice pickup, you know, because poor Trevor Lawrence, generational quarterback, needs weapons apparently. So the Jacksonville Jaguars, they trade back from 17 to 23 and pick up Brian Thomas. None of these are moves that really where I'm like, oh, bleep. None of these, put it this way, none of these are moves that these other three teams probably felt when the Texans traded for Stephon Diggs a couple of weeks ago. So I solid picks, I guess, but none of them are needle movers for me. So the AFC South, that's what happened in the division. I think the Texans are in pretty good shape. As far as the rest of the draft goes, I think to me, the biggest storyline is the quarterbacks. Obviously, 6 quarterbacks in the top 12. That's never happened before. And when they show the wide shot on TV of the 6 faces of the quarterbacks drafted all next to each other, I'm just looking at them going, man, 4 of those are going to be busts. I'm not saying that because of their faces, although with Drake May and J.J. McCarthy, I kind of am. They've got very punchable faces. But just the percentages and the fact that all 6 of these guys, and I'll include Caleb Williams in there, all have some question marks. I know Caleb is supremely talented, but I think there's some real makeup question marks with Caleb Williams. So this is going to be one of those I've said before, this is going to be a keep the receipts draft because there's going to be a lot of people lauding what all these teams did. You know, Sean Payton is getting lauded for taking Bo Nix at 12. And I feel like that's more because people think that, you know, it's more about people still trusting that Sean Payton is a QB guru as opposed to Bo Nix being worthy of being taken with the 12th pick. But 6 quarterbacks go in the top 12. I think at least 4 of them are going to bust out and fail. And all I have to say is God bless CJ Stroud. We don't have to worry about any of that stuff in Houston. But there were some interesting picks. Of those quarterbacks, the most interesting one was Michael Penix Jr. going to Atlanta with the 8th pick. The first three quarterbacks to go all were, you know, that was chalk. That was Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May all going 1, 2, and 3 to Chicago, Washington, and New England. I think a lot of people thought J.J. McCarthy would go shortly after that. I was not one of them. I had a pretty hefty bet on J.J. McCarthy going outside of the top 5. I did not know that Michael Penix Jr. would actually go ahead of J.J. McCarthy, though, and I certainly didn't know he would go to the Atlanta Falcons. Reports are that Kirk Cousins was stunned by this. He didn't find out about it till Atlanta was on the clock. What are the Falcons doing? Not just drafting a quarterback, and I like Penix fine, but you got Kirk Cousins signed to a $180 million deal, half of which is guaranteed. So he's going to be your starter for a couple of years unless you want to eat a whole bunch of money. And Michael Penix Jr. is not 20 or 21 years old. He's 24 or 25, if I'm not mistaken. He played 6 years of college football because of COVID, and he transferred from IU to from Indiana to Washington. And he's had multiple knee injuries and multiple shoulder injuries. So he's not a young 24. Like, he's a banged up 24. And I know the medical's all checked out on him and whatnot, but I say all that to say that he's not going to be your starter in Atlanta for at least 2 years, I would imagine, unless you're up for wasting a ton of money on Kirk Cousins. So that pick made no sense. It's strange that this is a new team for Kirk Cousins and this is happening. You know, it's one thing if, like, Aaron Rodgers, he's a starter there for years and years and years, and then they draft Jordan Love, and you just kind of know that's sort of the deal. Like, Kirk Cousins has yet to put on a uniform for the Falcons, and they've already drafted his replacement, who I feel like certainly is going to be replacing him inside of 4 years. And he signed a four-year contract. So that pick made no sense. I can't wait to hear the explanation from the brass in Atlanta as to why they did it. That's going to be fascinating. But that, to me, was probably the quarterbacks and the heavy slant towards offense were probably the biggest stories of this draft. Three quarters of the players drafted in the first round on offense, the first 14 in the draft on offense, 6 of the first 12 were quarterbacks. I don't know if that's indicative of just the talent on that side of the football in this draft being so drastically better than the defensive talent, or if it's just a sign of the direction the league's going in, where you look at the teams that are doing damage in the postseason and they're all teams that can go score 35 or 40 points on you. So it probably a combination of those two things. Other quick hits from the first round of the draft. I thought the Raiders drafting Brock Bowers was interesting, considering they have Michael Mayer already, who they drafted last year, but maybe they're doing a little Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez thing with two tight ends, minus the murdering and stuff like that. So there's that. Tony Khan, I don't know if you guys saw Tony Khan, the son of Shad Khan, the owner of the Buffalo Bills. Sorry, not the Buffalo Bills, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony Khan, who owns AEW, All Elite Wrestling, and was part of a wrestling angle earlier this week where he took a pile driver. And if you've never seen Tony Khan, he is a scrawny, skinny, kind of goofy-looking dude. Credit to Tony Khan. He took a pile driver on AEW television yesterday. He was selling it in the war room at the draft by wearing a neck brace tonight. Now, he was smiling a little too much for somebody wearing a neck brace who suffered an, air quotes, traumatic injury at AEW. But credit Tony Khan, the old school carny kayfabe, making sure that all the people out there think it's real. And it's real to me, damn it. So that, I thought that was pretty funny. And then just back to football for a second, the Buffalo Bills are just screwing everybody over, just handing Xavier Worthy over to the Chiefs. Thanks a lot, Buffalo. You're screwing yourselves too, you know. Although maybe not. You might not be a playoff team this year, Buffalo. So maybe you're not. Maybe you're just screwing the good teams. But Xavier Worthy, of course, if you don't know, the Chiefs traded up with the Bills to 28. Pick Xavier Worthy, who's going to turn into some version of Tyreek Hill in that offense probably. Ran a 4-2-1 at the combine. So thanks for nothing, Buffalo. Thanks for making the Chiefs even better. Appreciate you. So there you go. Those are just some quick hit thoughts on the first round. But most of all, from a Texans perspective, again, just to recap, I'm happy with how things played out. I'm okay with them not trading into the back end of the first round because I think there's a ton of players that fit what the Texans need right now. So it's a good night to be a Texan fan, even without a pick. It's a great offseason to be a Texan fan, and this should be a fun weekend. So day 2 is tomorrow. If you're listening to this and you're in Houston, maybe I'll see you at the draft party tomorrow. I'll be at the draft party downtown. Seth Payne, Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, they'll be on the radio on Sports Radio 610 starting at 6 p.m. covering day two of the draft. And I will be on Sports Radio 610 hosting day three draft coverage with John Harris and Cecil Shorts. So tune in to Sports Radio 610 or the Odyssey app, which is where you can also get this podcast. So for now, hope everybody enjoyed night one of the draft. It should be a fun day two. Hit that subscribe button. I didn't even use my graphics tonight either. Man, I had a nice, cool graphic that said day one recap. And actually, look, it whites me out on the video there. So anyways, here we go. I'll use this one. Subscribe, rate, review. There you go. It's late, man. It's late. I don't know what to tell you. Subscribe, rate, review. And appreciate everybody doing that. Until Saturday afternoon, that'll be when I record the draft recap episode. Until then, enjoy day two, day three of the draft.